listen to this.
Because
it could save your life.
It is this show. Listen to this because it could save your life. And if you don't, well, then you die. Okay? Like, look, it was hammered into me when I was in conservative talk radio that we had to convince people that if they didn't listen to our show, they would fucking die. That was a thing that a program director once told me to convince my audience of. Like, he said, never say it explicitly, but that should be your intent, that if they don't listen
heavily
to your
implied
show, then they will die. And I went, but what if they miss a day? And he's like, that's the point. Then they're going to die. And I was like, that just sounds evil. And he was like, I know. And then he started cackling, and his eyes burned red with fire. He started speaking backwards in Latin and raped a dog. Like, that's just, you know, that's how it works.
Just right in front of
talk radio.
No.
Yeah. So that was one of the reasons I didn't get that job. And I was, I'm kicking myself every day.
Right.
I didn't get it. Anyway, this is a show where we don't have any agenda. We just have a bunch of dumb facts that we'd like to share with you guys because they could save your life. And again, you could die if you don't listen to the show. So you need to listen to the show every week. Otherwise, you're going to die.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Of something.
Right. Probably
but the
from
possibility.
From a thing.
The possibility of immortality is out there if
you keep
listening.
Yes. Yeah. Which is why sometimes it seems like this show goes on for an eternity. All right.
it's not a guarantee, but no. The potential's there.
All right. So we have a bunch of really great facts today that we're going to share with you. I have the reason why McDonald's did not change their logo or their logo is the right thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to fix this.
Yeah.
Didn't change their logo back in the day. We're going to talk about monkey hangers, which sounds mm-hmm. like a racial thing. It isn't. We're going to talk about how there was a boxing match that lasted 7 entire hours and the aftermath of that. What happens if you're in a boxing match for 7 hours? And do you come out remembering your parents? Probably not. But first, we are going to get back to something that we were really enjoying doing before my computer stopped working and all hell broke loose. Cameo reviews.
Hey.
So Cameo reviews are, we go on the website Cameo and we're doing you a favor because a lot of people use these and they're like, I don't know if this person's good or not. Well, you can know whether they're good by our reviews. We will go on to these sites and subject ourselves to these B-level celebrities who you can pay to say whatever you want them to say, and we'll tell you whether it's worth it. So far, there's only been one that was worth it, and that was Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He was definitely worth it.
He'd make you feel better about your cancer diagnosis.
That was his whole entire shtick, was, hey, you're down. I get it. You're going to die. Sure. But old Hacksaw is here to hear your problems. And you can watch him on the Golden Age of Wrestling on WWE Network. Speaking of wrestling, we're going to... our cameo today is by a guy who has been wrestling with sobriety for at least 40 years. And
that was a solid segue, John.
Thank you.
That's why you're in the industry.
That's how I get paid the big bucks. Not like the monetary value isn't big, but the actual bucks themselves are large.
The currency they give you
it's way too big. Like, it can't fit it in my wallet. I'm not going to say the name of this guy. I want you to figure it out because it is a little, if you don't know who he is, it's a little bit hard to figure it out. I'll be honest with you. Here it is. Our cameo review for today is...
All right, everybody. Okay. First of all, thank you. Thank you, thank you. Thank you. It's,
All right, based on his voice alone, he obviously has done a lot of cocaine. I'm just going to say that. Based on his voice alone,
yeah, I don't think you talk like this unless you, your nasal passages have been worn down from the abrasive nature of inhaling way too much cocaine.
I'm just saying.
There's some esophageal things going on there too, I think.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
Whoa, hold on, my battery's running low. There. Sorry. Yeah. Well, I mean, doesn't it affect your esophagus too? See, this is what we need to have Rod on the show. Because Rod would be able to break this down for you. Be like, well, first it destroys your septum, and then it starts to go on your esophagus. I remember in DARE class in sixth grade, they told us that if you snort cocaine, when you bend over, blood will just start coming out of your nose freely, and eventually vomit will just come out of your nose.
Cool.
I don't know that was true. Because I've never
made an impression,
cocaine.
Though.
Yeah, yeah. It maybe honestly, to this day, have never snorted cocaine. Smoked it, yes. Doing that right now, in fact. All right, back to this guy.
We're here free Sunday night pub quiz at the Star Bar. Pub quiz at the Star Bar.
Yep, that's the thing. Twice. I think whoever this guy is, he has to repeat everything twice. Either he's got
OCD,
or a strange form of dyslexia where you have to repeat everything that you read twice to make sure that you said it correctly. So, like, you're reading it. It's kind of like there's a certain politician who I won't name. He'll say things like that are written for him on the teleprompter, and then he'll go back and say them again as if he just heard them for the first time when he just said them, even though it's a speech that he's... Okay, anyway.
Thank you for all you do. Helping out people, big charity, helping out people, feeding people, helping people.
All right, James, I will give you a multiple choice on who this is. Is it the star of The Stupids, Tom Arnold?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a homeless guy that Ryan Reynolds has paid to pretend to be him for a video? Which seems like a very RR type of thing to do. Yeah. Or is it the creative executive for Roseanne from 1987 to 1991, Tom Arnold? So there was three choices. I one of them is correct.
Oh, wow. And he sounds rough.
Yeah.
Like that's
So I'm assuming you're going with Tom Arnold.
Yeah.
Actually, all three answers were correct. This was Ryan Reynolds cameo, and he pays a homeless Tom Arnold to pretend that he is Ryan Reynolds. No, it's obviously just Tom Arnold from the show Roseanne and from every... I mean, he was in True Lies, let's be honest.
He's good in True Lies.
He's going to carry that for the rest of his life. No matter what, anything bad you say about Tom Arnold, he could murder 15 people in Nebraska. And you'd be like, yeah, but he was pretty good in True Lies. And the thing...
Surprisingly good.
Good. But the thing is, go back and watch True Lies. He's not good. He's not good in it. It's just a really good movie that he didn't fuck up by being in. There's a huge difference.
All right. I think for Tom Arnold, that is surprisingly good.
All right, back to him.
Well, it's pub quiz. First of all, number one question, who am I? Who am I? Big quiz, who am I?
Oh, he didn't repeat big quiz.
Who am I?
Who am I? Who am I? Big quiz,
who am I? Pub quiz, who am I?
About myself. I'm 61. I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. I'm a 61-year-old single father with a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old who's been quarantined for 17 years, it feels like.
So, you know, this is like if I was in radio, well, I still am in radio, but if I was in radio where there were some times when I'd get on air and we'd have what's called hard breaks. And as I got better at radio, this wasn't an issue. But when I first started, they would say, okay, you cannot be out any later or earlier than 15 after. Okay? No later or no earlier than 15 after. That's when you have to be out, right? And I'd be like, oh, okay. The very first show I ever did, I had like a whole prepared thing, a whole little bit that I did. I did it. When I timed it at home, it got me out at exactly 15. When I did it on air, I was so nervous that I rushed through it. And I looked up at the clock, and there were 5 minutes left. This is the kind of, what he's doing right now is the kind of thing that you do when you need to stretch. So you
got to pad the time.
But he has no reason to do that in a cameo video. They're only supposed to be 20 seconds long. We're already a minute into this. Because Tom Arnold keeps repeating the same thing over and over and over again.
Cool, just
started. Who am I? Who am I?
Bob Quiz.
Bob Quiz. I've got a kid. I've got a... who am I? Who am I? I've got
two kids. I'm 61. My kids are way too young.
yeah. Like, this is the video you would show at somebody's, like, conservatorship hearing to prove that they can't take care of themselves. This is what you would show. Like, if Britney Spears did this, people would be like, yeah, she shouldn't have a right to run her own life. We get it.
Or, you know, maybe before that you tried at an intervention, you're like, look at yourself.
Look at you, Tom.
Forget. Look at you did that for money.
You did that for money, Tom.
Not even a lot. It's only $125 for Tom Arnold, which is still more than it should be.
School just started here. Zoom school just started here. I've been married four times, of course.
Four times married.
Been happily single.
Happily single.
I have.
Four times.
Two. God damn it. Golden Globes with my ex-wife's name on it. So that's the name of our show.
If you were waiting to see how long it would take for him to mention Roseanne, it was a minute and 25 seconds. I'm done. I'm done with Tom Arnold. Do not buy the Tom Arnold cameo, because I can promise you they're all pretty much like this. They're all him just sitting there repeating the same words over and over again and slowly eventually getting to a point, but it takes like 5 minutes. 5 minutes of time that you will regret spending.
Do you remember his cameo on The Simpsons?
Yes, I loved his cameo on The Simpsons. It was really funny.
It was Treehouse of Horror, and I think it was a Y2K-related one, and somehow Homer had screwed everything up at the nuclear power plant, and everything went crazy, and Y2K.
Yeah, right.
So they had a thing called Project Exodus, where all of the best and brightest were going to be sent to Mars to restart society. So Lisa was accepted.
And Lisa was allowed to take one parent one with parent. Her. And she went, Mom!
They're like, no, I'm sorry, honey. You're only going to be able to take one of your parents. And I know it's a real hard choice. Mom.
Which
actually, fortunately, also got Maggie a pass on, too.
Oh, that's right. That's smart. That's smart of Lisa.
So Bart and Homer were just there, and they're like, okay, well, we're going to watch the world end and be a part of that. But then they notice a second rocket ship that wasn't guarded, and so they sneak onto there, and then they realize maybe something strange is afoot.
And here is the clip.
Ah! Tom Arnold! What the hell's going on?
Wait, only that ship is going to Mars. Ours is headed for the sun.
Yeah, ain't that a kick in the teeth? I mean, my shows weren't great, but I never tied people up and forced them to watch. And I could have, because I'm a big guy and I'm good with not.
And I did confirm that is, in fact, Tom Arnold.
That was, yeah. You know, listening to it, yeah, it's obviously him. The only difference is I was expecting him to repeat everything he had to say twice.
And I could, because I'm a big guy and I'm good with knots.
Right, and sound like Bob Odenkirk on Mr. Show ordering a donut. All right, now it's time for facts.
Factual ones.
First fact is mine, and it is this right here. In a town called Hartlepool, there was a man walking around in a monkey costume. Everybody's like, what's that guy doing in the monkey costume? And he was promising free bananas to school children if their parents voted for him to be mayor. He's going around saying, you kids want bananas?
Yeah, well, who doesn't like bananas in Hartlepool, England? We need it for the potassiums, don't we?
And he's like, well, you're going to get all the free goddamn bananas your dumb British mouths can handle if your parents vote for me. So they went home and told their parents, vote for the banana guy in the monkey costume. And indeed the parents did. And he was elected mayor of Hartlepool, England. He won. and served as mayor for 11 years. And then, to make things even crazier, he was Hartlepool's first elected mayor. The first one. And the last one. After he stepped down, they said, you know what? We don't need any more mayors in this town. We're done. We're done with mayors. So the only mayor of Hartlepool, England, was a guy who walked around in a monkey costume and promised free bananas to school children. Now, while it might have seemed weird for most of us, there being a guy walking around in a monkey costume promising free bananas to children. In fact, I think that in most cities in America, that would get you shot or at least arrested. Wasn't that weird because in Hartlepool, England, they have this crazy fascination with monkeys. Seems weird for a town in England. Why would they be obsessed with monkeys? The reason is because back in the Napoleonic Wars, apparently a French ship was wrecked just off the coast of Hartlepool. And a little monkey that had been dressed in a little monkey French uniform, because the French have a sense of humor, washed up on shore and was apparently the only survivor. Hartlepool, being a little coastal town, wasn't super full of intelligent people, and some of the locals decided to try the monkey on the beach as a spy. This monkey washed up, he's wearing a French uniform, and the people go, hey,
beach trial.
Hey,
beach trial.
He's a fucking French spy is what he is. Look at him, the way he's scratching his butt. So they tried him on the beach, found him guilty of being a spy. And before they found him guilty, they did have a trial where they asked him a bunch of questions. But because he didn't have any idea what was going on because he was a monkey,
Well, and he would have spoke French.
Yes, that's true. Which, very, very monkey-ish kind of language. Give me some French, James. I know you can do that. Right? See? I mean, voulez-vous coucher avec moi? Their hair fist. Because he couldn't understand what the fuck they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the Hartlepoolians had never seen, or Pudlians, I guess, had never seen a French person or a monkey before. They accepted that he was a spy.
Assumed they were the same thing.
And hanged or hunged.
Hanged.
Hanged the monkey on the beach, which is a sad ending of the story. But
do we know, did the monkey resist at all? Did he put up any kind of fight?
Details on that are sketchy. But okay. From what I've read, the monkey just resigned his fate and probably got up.
Would it
and
be fair?
Said some like really amazing, you know, how you have that moment in the movie where you get to say the thing before you die. I'm sure he said something amazing in French, like James, like I don't know what he would have said in French, but. Right. Right. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. And the great words of Nathaniel Hale. But because of that, people in Hartlepool, Hartlepudlians, are now known as monkey hangers because everyone else makes fun of them for being so stupid that they hung a monkey on a beach for being a French spy.
Would it be fair then to call that particular one a cheese-eating surrender monkey?
Oh, so that's where you're going with the whole did he just give up? That's actually good.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where they're like, look, we need to hang this monkey, otherwise he's going to eat all of our fucking cheese. Yeah,
he would have turned his nose up at cheddar. He'd have been like, I mean, it's fine, but
it is cheddar. I actually figured out how to speak in a very bad French accent. A little while ago. It's you push.
What's your trick?
You push your lips together like this. And then you talk like this. So you have to make a box with your lips. And you can talk like a French man.
uh, It's an interesting theory.
It's not an interesting theory. It fucking works. I mean, granted, my French isn't as good as yours.
Well.
Yeah. All right, James, what's your first fact?
My first fact, as you alluded to, regards boxing and the longest known boxing match in history. It occurred in 1893 in New Orleans, Louisiana, between two lightweights, a Jack Burke and Andy Bowen. They fought for 110 rounds.
Holy shit.
3 minute rounds, 110 rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, promoters held the fight at the Olympic Club in New Orleans, Bowen's hometown, which had embraced boxing. Entered the ring on Thursday evening, April 6th. Wouldn't come back out until Friday, April 7th. Burke, who was said to enjoy taunting his opponent, started out strong, getting the better of Bowen over the first several rounds. Even after wobbling him in round 25. But Bowen was resilient. One of his nicknames was Iron and could not be toppled easily. In round 48, he rallied to send Burke to the floor, but the time expired before Burke could be counted out. He was, like Zach Morris, saved by the bell.
Boo.
At an unknown point in the bout, Burke found himself with two broken hands, the likely consequence of repeatedly hitting a man who kept coming forward. From that point on, Burke's offense was hampered. Bowen's was ineffectual. The result became a war of attrition.
Was there a winner?
After 108 rounds, referee John Duffy sensed exhaustion in both fighters and the crowd. Some had even fallen asleep in their chairs. He told Bowen and Burke they'd only have two more rounds to try and finish the bout. When the 110th round ended without a winner or even a punch thrown, Duffy waved off the fight, declaring it a no contest.
Wow.
And so later explaining it was actually a draw.
I don't know. I think like after all of that, you'd want, like, even if you lost, wouldn't you kind of want a decision just so you could be like, look, otherwise it just seems like the fight didn't happen. When did this take place? When was this?
1893.
It seems about right. Okay.
Yeah, 1893. 7 hours and 14 minutes.
7 hours and 14 minutes. Wow.
That's why they have like 10 rounds. They don't go.
They have a limit. Yeah. Now, yeah, that's why they, because, you know, otherwise there might be brain damage. But then back then, like who could tell? Nobody could read anyway, you know?
Right.
We're like, oh, I think that guy's the guy drooling on himself. Yeah. He's the president. What are you talking about? Like how is that a problem? And how things have changed. So yeah, I don't know. I love though that they're like, okay, we need to stop the fight because the crowd is getting tired. That's like in baseball, because technically, yeah, baseball game's supposed to go on forever, but there is a limit. You can go on for as many innings as you want, but at a certain point, I think it's usually 2 o'clock in the morning, they will stop the game and then resume it the next day.
Right.
Because it's like nobody's watching anymore. Everybody went home. Everybody's tired. They're sick of this shit. So then they'll just kind of finish off the last three innings or whatever they need to do the next day when the players have a chance to sleep and can actually hit the ball. So at a certain point, I think, you know, most ball players can throw a ball fast enough to strike out a tired batter, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know if they postpone a game like that and they resume it the next day, mm-hmm. if you were in the game and taken out that next day, are you still ineligible to play that game?
Whew. I would assume so. Yeah. I would assume so, yeah. I do know that one of the longest games ever was a St. Louis Cardinals game back in the 80s where Jose Oquendo played every single position. Like, on a lark, they just decided to have him play every single position, even pitching. And I can't remember what Oquendo played. I think he was outfielder. But yeah, he They had him play every single position. That's why he became known as the secret weapon.
Secret weapon.
Yeah. All right.
Also, apparently, they found out later that both of these guys lost about 10 pounds.
So there you go. There's your weight loss secret. Okay. There's your weight loss secret. You just
box
fat,
for 7.25 hours.
Yeah. And also stop being a pussy. How about that?
7 hours, 19 minutes. I'm sorry.
All right. My second fact is this. It's the history behind the golden arches at McDonald's. Now, you might think, well, there's no secret to that history. It's M for McDonald's. And you're kind of right. The McDonald's brothers were looking for a logo, and they settled on an M, like a big M, and they went to this minimalist designer who designed the original Golden Arches. But back in the 60s, when Ray Kroc had taken over the business and was franchising McDonald's all across the United States, some people were changing it up. And they liked the way it looked in different places. Like, in fact, in Belleville, Illinois, I think that on the West End, right, they still have the McDonald's with just the single arch.
The single arch, yep.
Because it's that old. There was, at that point then, some discussion regarding the need for a new logo and one that, like, everyone would use. Because maybe these places don't like it, so let's have one that everybody likes. So they went to a marketing expert. And they showed him the McDonald's logo. I mean, he knew it or whatever, but they're like, do you think we should change it? And he went, no, you need to have the golden arches. And they're like, okay, why? And he's like, have you ever read Freud? They're like, the French guy with the cigars? And they're like, no, the German guy with the cigars. Actually, he's from Austria, but whatever, who cares? They're all the same. Point is, he would tell you to keep this because those golden arches, they look like some big old titties. They look like some just old big old pendulous breasts. And I just can't imagine being that horny ever that I looked at the McDonald's logo and went,
Oh,
I see what you're trying to say. I got a Big Mac for you. Two all beef patties, you know what I'm saying? Special sauce.
Don't get me started on the special sauce.
So, yeah, but they took his advice and they said, we're going to stick with that. So the McDonald's logo would perhaps be different today had it not been for one incredibly horny marketing expert. you got to wonder what this guy doesn't get turned on by. He gets turned on by the letter M.
Well, specifically the golden arches.
Yeah. Like, hey, have you ever looked at the curvature of the earth? Like, you ever get up in a plane and see the horizon? You know what that looks like, right? A labia. That's right.
I mean, you know, a standard M, that looks kind of like robot titties. With the sharp edges.
Oh, yeah. Like Rosie the Robot. Yeah.
Just robot titties.
Give me them. If I put in some double A's, will you give me some of them double D's?
Delightful.
Anyway. So, yeah. Again, I don't think he's right, but there are probably some of you listening to this right now going,
yeah, no, I always masturbate to the McDonald's arches. I don't see what's wrong with that. That's cool. That's fine. Yeah.
Sometimes when I bring the bag home, I draw little nipples on the top of the arches just to make it more anatomically correct.
Well, they're upended breasts, too. Like, they're facing the wrong way anyway.
And gravity-defying.
True. Yeah. Again, who isn't turned on by that? All right, what's your second fact there, James?
This is one that I just happened across today and actually replaced another fact that'll have to wait for another day.
All right.
And kind of in light of the Cardinals, the St. Louis baseball Cardinals getting the ever living shit kicked out of them last night by the Cleveland Indians.
Okay.
They lost bad. Anyway, what was the score? That's neither here nor there. 14-2.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a football game, right? That's not that bad.
Two touchdowns and a safety.
Two touchdowns and a safety, yeah. I mean, at least the Cardinals got a safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something. Mm-hmm. So there's a guy that pitched for the Indians back in 1919 by the name of Ray Caldwell. Okay. And this is, I actually found it on a different site, but this came up on MLB. Caldwell was known as a talented pitcher who, due to a fondness for, let's say, nightlife, never was able to put together sustained bouts of success. Nevertheless, if you caught him in a period of remorseful repentance, he could really help a team's pitching staff. Prior to 1919, played for the New York Yankees. They traded him to the Red Sox after he'd left the team without notice during the 1918 season. They just dipped. Like, he just dipped. Nope.
Yeah.
That, I'm going to get drunk.
Yeah.
So, like, all right. You have him, Boston.
And we were like,
apparently,
yes.
Boston's manager had a reputation for being kind of a hard ass, so they thought, well, that'll help.
Mm-hmm.
But in Boston, he became the road roommate with a 24-year-old pitcher and slugger named Babe Ruth.
Oh.
So the sobriety thing didn't work out too well for him.
No.
Anyway, so Boston trades him to the Indians. The Indians are trying to catch up with the White Sox.
Okay.
It's a pennant race. So Tris Speaker, who was the manager for the Indians, mm-hmm. would just tell him, hey, man, you know what? Come pitch, and after your game, just go get blasted. Just get wasted, and don't even show up the next day.
Yeah.
It's cool. And that kind of worked for him. So he'd pitch, and he'd get shithoused, not come in the next day. The following day, you know, he'd come in, do a little running, little long toss, get ready for the following start. This is all quite funny, but not the fact.
Yeah.
let me get the date here. August 24th, 1919, pitching a game. They're playing the Philly, or no, the Athletics, the Philadelphia Athletics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a while back.
Yeah.
Pitching a pretty good game. Cleveland scores two runs. Philly scores one. Get to the ninth. Gets the first two guys out. It's kind of an overcast day, you know? He gets struck by lightning.
What?
Gets struck by lightning on the mound with two men out in the ninth. It's his first game with Cleveland, by the way.
Yeah. What happened? Is this a superhero origin story? And then he could like throw the ball 500 miles an hour and nobody could catch him?
Yeah. What happened next is a matter of some dispute, but two things are for sure. A bolt of lightning struck somewhere within the confines of League Park, and it knocked Caldwell out cold.
Oh, my God.
Some reports say the lightning struck an iron rail near the press box and made its way down to the field, out to the mound. A bolt came hurtling from the sky and smashed into the ground near the pitcher's mound. A direct hit would have killed any mortal. Caldwell was struck, a glancing blow, fortunately. He was flattened and knocked unconscious for 5 minutes. Caldwell had another theory. The bolt entered him through the metal button atop his cap. He said the experience felt like someone hit him on the head with a wooden board.
So
after the game, he claimed to have discovered a burn mark on his chest, which he attributed to the lightning strike.
Jesus Christ.
The strike knocked off catcher Steve O'Neill's mask and cap. Third base coach Harry Davis lost his hat. Umpire Billy Evans said he felt a tingle of electricity in his legs.
Okay. You said it was overcast. It wasn't even like raining. And they're like, okay, let's push it. Just it's a little overcast. Then all of a sudden lightning hits the guy on the mound.
Yep. Here's the thing. They're like, oh shit, he's dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they run out and they like, they touch him and they get like, zzz.
Yeah.
He gets up. He's like, oh
yeah,
shit. Okay, two arms, two legs, all the fingers and toes seem to still be there. He finished the fucking game.
God damn it. I don't know why it
makes
me
angry. Got the 2-1 complete game win.
He
after
finished
being struck
pitching
by lightning unconscious for 5 minutes.
Well, I mean,
I thought Bob Gibson was a hard ass.
Yeah, Bob Gibson tried to keep pitching when he broke his femur.
Yeah.
Like refused to leave the mound after he broke his leg. Bob Gibson wasn't struck by lightning. Bob Gibson was probably watching that going, oh, you know.
At least I wasn't struck by lightning like that one fucker.
That's my Bob Gibson impersonation, which is not actually that far off. That's kind
of
how he sounds.
It's not a voice you would expect from what was considered one of the most intimidating pitchers in Major League Baseball.
Bob Gibson would talk like this, God damn it. But no.
He's Dark Knights it up.
Yeah.
He kind of talked like this, Bob Gibson did.
Wow, that's amazing. That's the kind of story, like, if it was a TV or a movie, then he would have, like he could make the ball do tricks and he could, you know.
Yeah. He was a spitballer. That was his.
Yeah. But then after that, he didn't have a tongue anymore, so he fried off in his mouth. I thought it was going to end with he exploded, like, because he was so filled with alcohol. God, can you imagine that happening now? Like, the craziest thing I think that's happened in modern baseball was, remember that time Randy Johnson was pitching?
Oh, and he killed the bird?
Yeah, it was Randy Johnson, right? He threw, and a bird just flew in the middle, in between, and he hit the bird. And it's not even like the bird just dies. The bird explodes. It is just a flurry of feathers going everywhere. And
like when you see a pillow fight in a cartoon,
yeah,
and a pillow comes open.
Yes.
It's just all feathers.
My
kind of what it looked like.
My favorite thing about that is if you watch the video, like the bird gets hit and explodes. Whoever the batter is, like, steps out of the box and like looks around. The umpire just calmly goes, "Ball." But it wasn't a ball, ump. It was a strike, specifically bird strike.
On a bird.
All right. That was great. My last fact is this. It's about a composer in Vienna named Daniel Stiebelt. He was one of Europe's most renowned piano virtuosos, and he was a typical Prussian, very formal, correct, and proper. In 1800, he came to Vienna, no doubt with the aim of advancing his musical reputation, which was actually already pretty solid. He'd composed for kings all over Europe. He wrote an opera based on Romeo and Juliet that was actually pretty popular. And he even wrote
some Austria music. Was pretty hot for the classical composers.
Austria is just a crazy city. Our crazy, crazy country. But Vienna specifically is a crazy city. Like, didn't we have a fact one time that Hitler, Stalin, and I want to say Trotsky, like three of the like biggest, most important, or no, Lenin. It was Hitler, Stalin, and Lenin all lived like within a mile of each other in Vienna in like 1902. Anyway, this was in 1800 though, and Stiebelt was trying to prove that he was a badass, and he challenged a pretty well-known composer in Vienna to an improv contest.
Rap battle.
More or less the freestyle battle at the time. The composer that he challenged was a guy named Ludwig von Beethoven, who was already the Eminem of Vienna when it came to these improv battles. And what these improv battles were a nobleman would support one pianist, another would support the other, and then in the salon of one of the noblemen, the two pianists would compete with each other, setting a tune to improvise on. So one person,
kind of a pianist measuring contest. you marking the time down so you can delete that?
I don't know why I felt that needed a sound effect, but I didn't have one that really, really fit.
So a bong hit.
Mm-hmm. So, and then they would have their pianist measuring competition, see who had the biggest pianist or the most the quickest one. Anyway, one person would set
the most
down
impressive.
The first one would set down the tune, and then the other one would have to improvise on the melody. And then they would go back and forth until one just couldn't keep up. And so this guy Stiebelt sits down, and this is the way it's described. He sat down with a tune that he had composed beforehand and the sheet music. So it's like, how the fuck?
Cheating.
How is this improv? Like, I've never been to an improv show where they got up there and be like, hey, I'm just going to read something that I wrote earlier because this is an improv, whatever. He played first, went to the piano, putting his piece on there, and played it, and apparently it was amazing. Like they refer to it as thunder growling in the bass of the piano, and he was an amazing piano player. He was a virtuoso. And when he got up, everybody applauded. Everybody thought it was great. And then everybody looked at Beethoven, like, come on, Ludi, what you gonna do with that shit? And apparently Beethoven, like, cracks his knuckles, sighs, rolls his eyes.
Does the Hulk Hogan thing.
Yeah.
Because he can't hear. But he's like...
but he actually couldn't hear. he gets up to the piano, grabs Stiebelt's sheet music, turns it upside down, and then just starts fucking rocking it. Just blasting it. Just playing... And then he goes, meh, turns it sideways and starts playing it sideways. They're like, what the fuck? And then he keeps just messing it up all over the place. He takes the first four notes and makes like basically a symphony right there out of these exact four notes. In fact, he later used those four notes for a symphony called the Eroica Symphony. But when he was done, obviously everybody was going fucking crazy. Beethoven gets up, bows. Stiebelt leaves, just walks out, and his nobleman like chases after him, like, hey, Danny, get back here. Come on, are we done? And he's like, I'm done. In fact, he said, I am never going to set foot in Vienna again so long as Beethoven is here, because, you know, back then people had a proper amount of shame. If you lost, you lost big. And you just left. You just didn't even go back because you couldn't. And he never did. Apparently, he never came back to Vienna, even though, again, he was a very famous, very popular composer at the time. And people wanted him to come back to Vienna and put on shows. And he's like, no, fuck you. Is that deaf bastard still there? Then no, I'm not coming back.
He came and talked some BDE.
Yep.
And he couldn't back it up.
Big Beethoven energy. So there you go. Beethoven is easy. Like I know there's like kind of it's almost a Stones Beatles type of thing with Beethoven and Mozart, and I don't think there's any competition. Like Beethoven, when I listen to Beethoven, I'm like, this is actual music. Like Mozart's good, but it's too, you know, like too frilly. Like none of it really pounds home, but Beethoven's just fucking rocks.
Now I don't know if you did this intentionally. But I just kind of picked up on it. two of your stories involved characters from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
I did not do that intentionally, but great point. That's
you
a
had
great
Sigmund
point.
Freud, and you had Beethoven.
Oh, yeah, and the French monkey. Oh, wait, no, that was Napoleon. Sorry, that was Napoleon.
But Napoleonic. Okay, yeah. So we could make an argument for three characters. Yeah. And the new Bill and Ted film is available for streaming.
Oh, is it? It's out now?
Yeah.
Have you seen it yet?
You can stream it. I have not seen it yet.
You know, but I know it gets written off.
I heard the reviews are pretty legit.
Yeah. So the first Bill and Ted movie sucks. I'm sorry. It's not good. It's okay. Like, as a concept, it's kind of cute. But the second one is actually really good. Bogus Journey is Bogus Journey is actually a legitimately good movie. And when we did sequels that are better than the original, I actually wanted to have Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey in there, but I knew I would be, you know, it wouldn't go over well. But I love that movie. And so, yeah, I didn't know the new Bill and Ted movie was streaming yet, but I will definitely watch it after we're done here.
Okay.
All right. What's your third fact?
This is going to be my one that could potentially save your life.
Oh, boy. All right.
This is from back in the halcyon days of 2016. In Kent, England, an inquest was held into the death of a 16-year-old boy 4 months after he was found on the landing outside his room. Inquest found that Thomas Townsend died on August 29th at 6:30 p.m. after he inhaled too much gas from a spray-on deodorant.
What? He used too much deodorant?
I don't know if it was like an Axe body spray. It was like
an Axe body spray. Yeah.
He sprayed it all over himself and succumbed to the effects of the gas, the coroner said, according to Kent Online. The teen's mother, Sally Townsend, said he would use spray-on deodorant in lieu of bathing. And after police examined his room at the child's home near Folkestone, Kent, they found 42 cans of aerosol products, including deodorant and hairspray.
Okay,
he would not take showers,
yeah,
but would stand there with a deodorant and spray half the can on himself, his mother said. Then he would spray aftershave to cover up the body odor.
Okay, first of all, spray on deodorant isn't going to cover up body odor. Because you need the roll-on. I mean, I've used spray on deodorant. I've had spray on deodorant before, and they're like, ooh, I'm a little musty, and sprayed it on. And you know what it smells like? Like BO mixed with deodorant. It just doesn't do the trick. Second of all, what a terrible mother. He wasn't buying that deodorant. She was buying it for him.
Oh, you right. Go through another can of deodorant there? Okay, I'll get you some more at this store, sweetheart.
You didn't make your son bathe.
Give me some more X-Body spray, Edith.
Yeah.
You sound a little bit like Edith.
I know. That's my go-to voice for generic women I don't like, even though I love Edith. But yeah, so she was buying him the deodorant. There's no way he was getting that himself. Because I'm sorry. Maybe you could say, well, maybe he had a job. And I'm going to be like, you think he had a job? You think the kid who stank so bad he had used half a can of Axe body spray to cover up his stink and didn't take showers, you think he had a good job?
Just reeked a BO, an Irish shower?
So your fact
is... But
it was
in Kent, in England, which is not Ireland.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah, so mind the aerosol sprays. Don't use too much Axe or you can die.
Mm. Oh, hey, supplemental fact. You want to hear this? It wasn't good enough to include it as one of my main facts, but since you said Axe, I'm going to follow it up. Okay, here it is. Back when The Shining was being filmed, it being a Stanley Kubrick movie, Stanley Kubrick, after a certain point, was like, I'm doing all my movies in England, right?
Mm-hmm.
And The Shining, for the most part, was filmed in England. I think there's some aerial shots there, Colorado or whatever, but for the most part, it's in England. And Jack Nicholson, famously in the film, had a part where he breaks down the door with an axe. I think you could use Axe body spray. It would dissolve the door, but he used an old-fashioned axe. Two facts about that. One, Jack Nicholson was so good at pounding the door down that it pissed Stanley Kubrick off because Jack Nicholson used to be a firefighter, and so he knew how to swing a goddamn axe. Take the axe through the wood, if you know what I'm saying. And like Kubrick was like, no, you can't do it like you know what you're doing. You have to do it like you're a maniac, and it has to take you a while to get through. The second fact is there was on set a professional axe polisher whose job was to make the axe look really shiny so that you could see he could see his reflection in it, and it just looked really cool in the shots and everything. That axe polisher went on to be a judge on American Idol named Simon Cowell.
Really?
Now you know the rest of the story. Yeah. Yeah. So I hopefully just ruined The Shining for some of you. Because now you won't be able to watch that movie without going, God damn, why am I thinking of Simon Cowell, that V-neck, hairy, chested fuck? Anyway. So yeah. All right, cool.
Take this, bitch.